Hi, my name is Melissa, and I'm a recovering addict. I don't need that. I'm pretty tall. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I am truly grateful for this program. I could never repay this program back for what it has given to me. You know, I'm grateful to be here today. A little nervous because, like, I've never been in a meeting where we mix it all up, and I think it's pretty cool. I just want to say how grateful I am for this program. I knew Jay when I first walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, man, and this program has changed my life forever. When I was asked to speak at this function, I was nervous. I haven't spoke in a few years. I used to go around and speak quite a bit in facilities, especially reaching out to the newcomers, man, and that was my passion. I'm really excited and nervous at the same time. You know, I'm just grateful to be here. I came from a place where I never felt comfortable in my own skin since I was a little girl, man. And, I'm a product of a family who were addicts as well. My dad was an addict. My mom was an addict, an undercover addict. And they were not very good at hiding this, you know, and I was just this little girl looking for love, you know what I mean, and can never find it with the family that I was given, you know, and I remember just always feeling out of place, uncomfortable, out of my skin, and looking for attention, whether it was good or bad, and it started for me way before the drugs and alcohol ever were in the picture. Like, it started with my behavior and the way that I acted, you know? Like, I was a troubled kid since I was little, and I was, you know, thrown back and forth with my mom and my dad. I used to see my dad physically abuse his significant others. My dad had a really bad drug and alcohol problem. I was that little girl where I'd be waiting for my dad because he promised that he was going to come and get me, and I'd be out there on the front porch and with my little suitcase waiting for my dad, and he would never show up, you know, and that's where the pain started for me as a little girl, you know what I mean, never feeling wanted, never feeling part of, like, always feeling displaced, you know, and not knowing why, like, always feeling like it was my fault, you know, and it, so for me, I acted out, you know what I mean, I acted out in all areas of my life, you know, my mom was amazing, she did the best she could with what she had, I had the most amazing mom, you know what I mean, like, I never knew that my mom was using, she kept it really hidden very well, but she was always there for me. She never kept me from my dad. And I just remember feeling hurt, you know, and just wanting that love, like not understanding what I did wrong and what was the reason why my dad didn't want me in my life, in his life, you know. And so this started for me since I was really young, and you know, like when I started getting in my teens, I started running away. I started ditching school, you know what I mean? And I dabbled in a little bit of weed and some alcohol. I remember my mom used to go, she married my stepdad, which was a very strict man. And my mom was a lot less strict and used to let me get away with bloody murder. And I remember the fact that you know, she would go to Mexico and go on vacations, and I would be left to my own device, you know what I mean? And I would throw the house parties, and I would, you know, get drunk with my friends, and you know, just innocent fun, just thinking that I was a teenager, you know, never knowing or thinking that I had a problem, you know? And for me, like, I don't know what it was. Like, it was just something that it was just, like, instilled into me where I felt like I, whether what I did, any kind of behavior, like, I needed that attention, you know what I mean? And I remember, like, breaking my mom's heart, like, at a young age, like, running away in and out of juvenile hall, in and out, you know, like, my mom would, you know, pick me up from jail, you know what I mean? Because I was, you know, a runaway, and they would find me, and they would pick me up, and they would call my mom and tell her that, you know, we have your daughter, and we found her in these places, and, you know, I just broke my mom's heart, and I continued to do that for a long time, you know, and for me, like, I'm gonna backtrack. When I was younger, you know, my mom moved me when I was a little girl to Hawaii, and I, like, grew up there and was raised there for 7 years, and my mom just couldn't stand the fact that she was stuck on an island, and they had, like, real big flying cockroaches out there, and I remember, like, my mom being, you know, out in the middle of the night with the can of Raid, you know what I mean? She just couldn't handle all the bugs that were out there and being trapped on an island and not being able to get off, but I've had, like, really good memories when I was a little girl raised in Hawaii, and then my mom, like, moved me to San Fernando Valley, and that's where I started to get into trouble, and that's where my journey began, you know, and when I was in San Fernando Valley, like, I got hooked up with some, you know, other people and did some things that I probably shouldn't be doing at 15 years old, and not even thinking that I was seriously having a problem, you know what I mean? I'm just being a teenager, you know, and looking back now, if I knew what I know now, like, it was an obvious sign that I was a troubled child, you know what I mean? It was just to the point so bad that, like, I was in and out of juvenile halls that my last stint in juvenile hall, the judge told my mom that I was able to go home. And my mom looked at the judge and said, "No, I'm not letting her come home." And the judge said, "Well, I'm releasing you, releasing her to you, and you really don't have a choice, right?" And my mom says, "Well, you can lock me up, you could do whatever you want to do, but I'm afraid that something's going to happen to my daughter. And every time she comes home, the first time I tell her something that she doesn't like, she runs away." You know, and they put me in it was called Hathaway Children's Services, and I had to stay there for a year, and that's, you know, like, and this is way before even the drugs. I was just dabbling a little here and there, you know, and I remember being in this placement. They put me up on top of this big old mountain. And by the time, like, if you even try to run away, like, they had a van waiting for you at the end. Like, you know, I couldn't get off this freaking hill that they put me on, you know. I'm a freaking runner since I was a little kid, man. Like anytime I feel uncomfortable or anytime I'm, you know, feeling like I want to crawl out of my skin, the first thing that I resort to is running from my problems. And I've been doing this since I was young, you know. And so I was, you know, forced to be at this place, you know, and so I just, you know, just like this program, just, you know, followed simple suggestions and just did what I had to do and programmed in this facility that I was put in, and I was there for a year, and, like, I showed so much improvement, right, and so, like, my mom was then comfortable to let me come home, and so she figured that moving me out of San Fernando Valley was a good idea because of the people I was hanging with. So she decides to move me to a city called San Dimas, California. And to me, I've never heard of this place, and I was kind of like, you know, like, where is this, you know, And so she moves me to San Dimas, and they won't take me into high school because of my track record and my behaviors. So they put me into a continuation school in San Dimas. So they put me in a school with other people who have behavioral problems. You know, and I remember, like, I missed so much school from running away and doing the things that I was doing, you know, and here I am in San Dimas and at this continuation school, and then, you know, I have this strict dad, or stepdad, that, you know, is really on me now that I'm back home, and, like, really about schoolwork and education and this and that, and here I am in this continuation school feeling alone, stupid, like out of place one more time in my life, you know what I mean? And the pressure of him and his authority, I rebelled every time. Like, it just didn't work for me, you know what I mean? He ruled with an iron fist, and my mom was just not that way, you know? So here I am in San Dimas, and, you know, I hadn't been home for a year, and I have just left this facility. And so I'm going to school here, and I'm struggling with my schoolwork. And at this point, I have never done hard drugs before. I've only used, you know, marijuana or occasional drink here and there. And I met this gentleman at my school, and he told me, well, you know what, I have something that will help you finish all your homework. I said, and what is that? And he proceeds to, in art class, proceeds to pull out this little baggie with this crystal formation kind of stuff. And it was really pretty, you know what I mean? And he decides to pull it out and crush it right there on the freaking table in art class. And he says, now put this up your nose. And he goes, and I guarantee you'll do all your homework tonight. So I said, shoot it. And I freaking did. And I, ever since then, for the first time in my life, I felt comfortable in my own skin. For the first time in my life, I had ambition, like energy, like courage, and like confidence, and like shit that I hadn't felt in a very long time, you know what I mean? And to me, you know, like, I didn't think it was, you know, I'm just, you know, testing stuff out like any other kid, right? And then before you know it, it started to become a habit, and I was doing it all the time. I got my work done, and I was getting great grades and stuff like that. But like, my mom started noticing the difference, right? And then I'm starting to sneak people into my room through the window, and we're partying all night while my parents are sleeping. And I'm doing all this stuff, right, thinking that my mom don't know, that my stepdad doesn't know, you know. And like, my mom pulls me aside and she's like, you know, your dad told me that he woke up in the morning to go to work and your lights were on and he heard some noises coming out of your room. I said, I don't know, dad's tripping, I was sleeping, I fell asleep with the light on, right? Like, all these excuses, right? And my mom's like, are you on drugs? And I was like, what? No, I would never do drugs. Like, weed, Mom? I've done weed before. She goes, I'm not talking about weed. I'm talking about stuff that keeps you up all night. I said, no, never. Like, bold-faced lied to my mom every chance that I freaking could get, you know what I mean? Because I wasn't going to admit that, you know? And then, like, it's a trip. Like, I started doing that, and then, like, I remember, you know, paraphernalia was involved, and like, it started to get harder to hide what I was doing, and I left some stuff out, and, you know, I was out with a friend, and I remembered that I left some paraphernalia out on my bed, and like, that heart-wrenching drop, like, oh my God, you know what I mean? And I flew back home real quick to try to find that paraphernalia, and it was gone. It was gone. And I knew I had left it there. You know what I mean? And like, I don't know where, I'm like, oh my God, I'm tripping. Like, I know that I put it there. And like, and so like, but my mom didn't say nothing. Nothing was said, you know? And like, I'm like, I don't know where that was. And at that time, I had a stepbrother that was living with us, right? And I knew he messed around. I never, you know, got high with my stepbrother. And he came in the room, and he goes, "Hey, by chance, are you missing something?" And I go, "What are you talking about?" You know, just what do you mean? He goes, "Don't act stupid." He goes, "Your mom found those two pipes in your bed, right?" And like for that whole week that went by, like my mom didn't say a word to me, and so I didn't say a word to my mom, right? So we just kept it like that, and. And so, like, this went on for a while, you know, and then, like, for me, like, it started, like, for me in my mind, I thought, like, well, you know what, I'm only doing it on the weekends, I'm only doing it this, like, I don't have that problem, right? And, like, it was obviously a problem, you know what I mean? I was lying to my mom. I wasn't being truthful to her. I was, you know, doing things that I knew I wasn't supposed to be doing. And before you know it, like, I was off and running at the age of 17, and I got into a relationship that was not healthy. And my mom warned me, you know, like a mother's love, you know what I mean? Like mothers always know what's best for their children, right? And I just felt like she was just intervening and getting in the way, and I just didn't want to listen. And I ended up running away with this man and was using with him, you know, we ended up getting our own apartment, and then I found out that I was pregnant with this, now my son, Andrew, was my first son, and I ended up pregnant and managed to stay clean through that pregnancy. And he used to use, his mom used to use, and we used to use all together, you know. And when I got pregnant, they continued to use. And that was very hard for me, you know what I mean? Because, like, I have that addict blood in me, you know what I mean? And it was already obvious that I have spent this long in my life, this short period of time. I was only 18, you know what I mean? Doing nothing but using, running away, and doing the things that we do best, right? And I managed to stay clean through almost half of my pregnancy, and then one time I said, "Let me have some." Even knowing that I could have hurt my son, right? Like, and this is the thing, like, in the disease of addiction, like, they say insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. Like, for me, it was never expecting different results. Like, I knew exactly what was going to happen every time I did it and did it anyways. That was the definition of my insanity, you know what I mean? And even knowing that I was going to put myself in a bad situation, I chose to freaking use that day, right? And it threw me into labor immediately. I had to go to the hospital, and you know, like, I didn't know what I was gonna do, right? And thank God they gave me that shot, right, that stops you from going into labor, and sent me home, and it stopped, right? And you would think something like that would open my eyes and make me realize that I have a freaking problem. Right? Like, taking a chance like that and doing it anyways, you know what I mean? And this is just, you know, just a little glimpse of my insanity, right? And And everything flashed in my head, like I could lose my baby. This can happen, right? And I didn't touch it again. And I was able to give birth to a healthy baby boy. And he was the light of my life, you know what I mean? And like, I can never explain that feeling of being a new mother, you know what I mean? And so I had this little boy, right? But I'm still in this relationship with this man that I continue to freaking use after having my son. And our relationship consisted of keeping me pregnant and not having any friends, not having any life. Like, I knew nothing outside of our relationship. He used to like to keep me loaded and pregnant, you know, and I continued to have babies with him. I have 6 children. This is really freaking hard to talk about. I love you too. After having my son, I continued to freaking use. And I continued to freaking use. And when I had my 3rd daughter, I used the pee of my 2 younger kids when I went into labor with her. And because I knew that they were going to check my urine when I came in the hospital to give birth to her. And so I took urine from my children to take into the hospital so that they didn't know I was testing positive for methamphetamine. And I was able to leave the hospital with that little girl because they had no idea. And then I continued to use, no matter what, like even the thought, like, hey, you know what? You are walking on a thin line here. Like, you are risking it all. Like, you are going to end up putting these children in foster homes or in the system or this and that. But no, that wasn't enough for me to stop. And I continued to do what I continued to do, you know, until I couldn't hide it anymore, right? So I had my other daughter, and I was rushed. All my kids are 1 year apart. I was pregnant for almost 6 years straight with my significant other. All 6 of these children belong to him, and that's how he liked to keep me. You know what I mean? My 4th daughter, I didn't have time to find urine. I didn't even happen so quick that I was rushed to the hospital. And she tested positive for methamphetamine, and they took her out of my care. And CPS got involved, you know. And I did everything that they wanted me to do, you know what I mean? I went to the parenting classes. I was doing, you know, testing regularly, doing everything that they were telling me to do. But unfortunately, because I chose to stay with this man, and he chose not to do anything that CPS wanted him to do. He continued to test positive. He continued to not go to parenting. And I continued to stay with this man. And at that time, that's when they started to change the laws as far as adopting babies that were newborn. They give you 12 months to figure things out or do exactly what they ask of you, or you lose your parental rights at 12 months. I was already at 11 months doing what I was doing, and I knew that he would never be able to do what he needed to do in time in order for us to get our daughter back into in our lives. And so I decided it was the most hardest thing in my life to do, but it was the most hardest thing to do because every time I would see that little girl, she would cry because she didn't know who I was. Like the foster mom that she was with, she thought that that was her mother. And so like it was just so difficult, like the most painfulest thing that I've ever had to go through. Like, and it was so weird because they let me keep my other kids in my possession, but they were wanting to take my newborn from me. And so like I had to do the most hardest thing in my life, which was to sign my parental rights away so that that made my daughter would have a better life with someone else. And after that, like when that happened, like I just spiraled. Like if I have any mothers in here, like just the thought of losing your child like that was so freaking painful that I did not want to freaking feel it anymore. You know, and like for me, that's when the drugs started to become even more of a problem for me because I ran to it even more because I did not want to feel. I did not want to feel this pain anymore. You know what I mean? Like her face was continuously in my mind. After that, our relationship just started to fall apart. Like, we were fighting. It was spousal abuse with me. He called the police on me, and I ended up in jail for the first time for spousal abuse. And this just kept going on and on and on, you know what I mean? And I remember being in jail one day, and this deputy came to my cell. And she came up to me and she goes, "So I met your significant other." And she goes, "And he's an asshole, to be quite honest," straight up to me, right? She goes, "If you do not want to visit him, he's in the waiting room, not only in the waiting room, and he put you here, right? He's in there with your kids so they can see you in jail." You know, and I remember this, it was the weekend, right? And she goes, "I have a little something that I can tell you to get out of that situation." She goes, "But you can't tell anybody that I told you." She goes, "I'm going to give you a little legal advice." And I said, "And what is that?" She goes, "When you get out of here, I would go and go to the court and get a move out order. And then what's the one where you can't be around each other? A restraining order. And that's how you get them out of your house." And I said, "Okay, shoot." I went, when I got out on Monday morning, I went straight to the courthouse, got a restraining order, a move-out order, and had him served and told him to get out of my house. And that was the first time I ever did anything for myself because I knew it was a toxic relationship. I knew that nothing was going to change. I knew that I wanted something different and better for myself. I just didn't know how to do it because I had relied on this man for so many freaking years. And that when things like this continue to freaking happen, you kind of settle and let it continue to freaking happen. You know what I mean? So I told him to get the hell out of my house. You know what I mean? And he looked at me and he said, "This isn't real." I said, "Yes, it is. It has a stamp on it and everything. Do you need a police officer to show you how real it is? Get out of my house." You know what I mean? And that was the first time in my life that I was ever able to stand up for myself, you know what I mean? And I want it better for my kids. Like, I didn't want to continue to stay pregnant and on drugs and in this relationship. Like, I wanted something more, you know what I mean? And I just didn't know or have the courage to freaking do it, you know what I mean? And so, like, when that finally happened, like, I felt some kind of freedom, like something might be able to change, you know? And I went to the court and I followed through. And I did what I was supposed to do, right? And then, like, something, and this is, like, the biggest mistake I think I ever made in my life, is that I should have continued on with that in the court. Something in my heart and my mind said, like, I already got him out of the house, but I don't want to keep him from my children. So can't we, and I told him, can't we as two adults figure out what is best for me, you, and our children, right? I don't want the courts involved. I just needed you out of the house because we're no good for each other. So can, like, now from now on, we figure out what's best for our children? And he said, yeah, we can do that. I remember it was my daughter's birthday. And she was to go to her dad's and come back and then celebrate the rest of the day with her birthday. He never brought her back. At that time, he had all my kids and decided not to bring them back. And I remember the panic that I felt inside. You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean? He wouldn't answer his phone. It kept going to voicemail, and I'm like panicking, you know. And finally, he answers the phone, right? And I said, "Why haven't you brought my kids back?" He said, "You know what? You did this. You separated our family." He goes, "You're not getting them back." I flipped out. I called the police. They came to my house. They asked for a custody order. I did not follow through with that part, so I could not show him that. And the police officer said that there was nothing that they could do, that I needed a court order saying that I had custody of my children. He didn't want those kids. All he wanted to do was freaking hurt me with his actions and doing what he did. His intentions were never what was best for those kids. He did that, and I remember, like, feeling hopeless, lost. One more again. I'm in this house that I'm supposed to be sharing with my children, and it's empty. You know, and I'm going to be quite honest, I gave up. I gave up. And that was the moment that my addiction ran rampant in my soul, my spirit, my mind. Like, I just did not want to feel. I did not want to cope with anything. And at this time, like, most of my using was just with him, right? And so I'm in San Bernardino in this house by myself, and I started to go outside the house and start meeting other people. that were heavily involved in that lifestyle. And before you know it, they took over my house. I remember locked in my room with the door and the rope tied to my trundle bed because I was afraid that they were going to come into my room and do something to me, you know. And it was active gang members that I ended up associating with. Like, I have never experienced that kind of stuff prior to this happening, you know, and I had thrown myself literally into a world I had no clue I was getting myself into, you know, and this happened what felt so quick, you know, and before you know it, like, I had to start learning how to live that lifestyle, how to not get hurt, and how to get thick skin and start living the way that they were living, you know what I mean? And it turned me into this person today that, like, I am not proud of being, you know? Before you know it, I was homeless. I lost that house. And living in trap houses, living on couches, living in garages, living in parks, like, and, like, for me, coming where I come from, you know what I mean? Like, even though that, like, I didn't have nothing traumatically bad happen to me when I was a little girl, like, just, like, how quickly this disease will devour you. And that's my experience, you know what I mean? Like, here I am, haven't seen my children. The lifestyle was more important to me than my children. That lifestyle was more important to me than fighting and getting them back in my life. You know what I mean? Like, I just let this lifestyle consume me, and before you know it, that's all I knew. I was in and out of jail due to related crimes that you do when you're out there. And they used to have these papers, right? And like, you can ask the deputies questions and stuff. And I was just being silly, and I was like, I put it down on the paper, how many times have I been in jail? And then they wrote back to me, they said too many fucking times. And then he put 27. See, for me, like, I could do that. I can go in and out of jail, because when I was out there, when I was in jail, that was a time for me to rest my neck. That's where I would eat. That's where I would sleep. That's where I would get okay. And then I would get out and do it all over again. Over and over and over. And before you know it, it's been years and years. And like, and then, you know, someone said that prison is better than county jail. I call bullshit, because I ended up graduating to prison, you know? And for me, what sucks is that everybody that I freaking knew got this freaking wonderful deal, right? They got to go into treatment. They got to go to some drug court program. And, you know, like, I had been on the run for over 5 years on this case, this, what I got caught for. And, I had tried to do the geographical thing and thought that maybe if I just left here and moved somewhere else that things would get better, but unfortunately I took myself there. And so I ended up with the same problems I did here, but only in Oklahoma. I mean, I lasted for a little bit, got a job. I was a waitress, tried to do the thing. And before you knew it, I ended up finding the druggies in Oklahoma. And then I was off and running then there too. You know, and I remember getting arrested in Oklahoma, and the cop took me to the station, right? And they called my probation officer. And I thought I was getting extradited back to California. And my PO was on the, or my probation officer was on the phone, and he told the officer, you tell her she steps one foot in California, it's on and cracking. But we're not extraditing her. And I was just blown away, because I thought I was definitely getting sent back to California to face my consequences, you know what I mean? And that didn't happen. And so, like, I got heavily involved in the drug life in Oklahoma, and that was quite different. Before you know it, I was speaking, how y'all doing? And it was just really weird. And they used to have this, the worst dope I have ever done, ever, in Oklahoma. And when I was introduced to this stuff, they said that they grew it in the ground, and it grew as a spore, and it crystallized. I said, get out of here. That was, and when you did it, it had a shelf life. I said, what? It had a shelf life of 2 weeks, and so you could be smoking it and doing whatever you want to do with it, and nothing happens. So then I got a bright idea. Let me go get the stuff from California, and let me teach you guys, you Okies, some new business. You know what I mean? And so, like, for me, like, I got stuck in that lifestyle, man, you know what I mean? And by this, like, my kids ended up, my boys ended up with my mom, and my girls were with my significant other's mom. And this went on for a while, right? And I'm just doing what I'm doing out there, not caring about anything, consequences, my children. Like women will come up here in the program and tell you how much they love their children, right? I can tell you how much I love my children, but I love that lifestyle and drugs more than I did my children. And it was very apparent by the way that I was living, that I cared about that lifestyle more than I did those poor little babies that had no clue where their mother was. See, I used to think I was better then because I used to go to drug houses and this and that, and I would see the little babies that were in those drug houses in dirty diapers and being dragged here and there. And I used to think, well, whoa, I don't do that. At least my kids are with their family and they've never seen me do that. And for me, that kept me out there longer because I thought I was better than those other people I used to get loaded with that were, getting high with their kids in the room. You know, so for me, like, I led that lifestyle anywhere that I went. I went to Oklahoma, came back to California, started moving dope from here to Oklahoma, and did it for a while. You know, met that great boyfriend that we thought we were running stuff, doing stuff, making money, and it was just as toxic. Because he liked to put his hands on me when he would have too much dope. And this went on and this went on until I ended up back into California, right? And I got pulled over. Yeah, remember my probation officer? He wasn't playing. You know, and I remember I got arrested in San Bernardino and they took me to CDC off of 2nd Street, and I was there for a little bit, and he let me sit there for a good 30 days without even letting me know what he was going to do to me. And I remember him showing up, and, you know, everybody has these ideas when you're locked up. Everybody, you know, you talk and you shoot the shit with each other. Or you got nothing better to do in jail. And they're telling me, oh, yeah, you can do this. They're going to give you a drug program. Like, don't worry, this and that. So I had hopes. I had hopes, but he shot them down real quick. And he looked at me and he said, you're going to prison. I said, can I get a drug program, something? Like, I have a problem. He goes, I don't care what your problem is. Your problem now is that you're going to prison. And left. So I went back into my cell with the realization that I'm not going home. I'm not, like, the ride has ended right now. You know, and, it's crazy. They sent me to Chowchilla State Prison, and I did 3 years there. And they moved me from there to Chino to release me. I left a little bit before 3 years, right? But before that, I say this all the time, like, I remember when I was homeless, living in those parks and watching those families be at those parks with their little children, and I remember I used to fantasize, like, why can't I be that parent? Like, just living a normal life, like, taking your kids to the park and just, you know, being a freaking normal human being. Why can't I ever be that person? You know what I mean? And like, for me, you know, I would fantasize when I was in prison of, like, when I get out, I knew nothing about the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. All I knew was about drug treatment centers or whatever, but I never got that opportunity. And so, like, I would fantasize about staying clean, you know, and talking to the other girls that were locked up with me, like, this is what I'm gonna do. And, you know me, because I could stay clean in prison. I didn't touch the hooch. I didn't take nobody's medication. And I sure the heck wasn't gonna use meth stuck in a cell. You know what I mean? With eight other girls or whatever, you know what I mean? So like, I did my time and I managed to stay clean and I got out 4/19 of 2010. And the only number I could remember was my Connects number. So he was the one I called to pick me up from the train station. And he came and he picked me up in a U-Haul truck, and I should have known this was all bad already. You know, he picked me up in a U-Haul truck at the train station, geeked out, wiggled out, noodle grooving out the game. And I remember, like, I had been clean for almost 3 years already, you know, and I remember that gut-wrenching feeling I felt within my soul, you know what I mean? Like, I had the intentions of doing what I needed to freaking do, but my disease was right here in my freaking ear, you know what I mean? Because my disease sounds like it's my own voice in my head telling me things, right? And I was like, I could do this. I could stay clean. I could stay clean. And then I managed to stay clean for 4 hours, and I was already with a needle in my arm. You know, knowing what the consequences were going to be, knowing that I had to go and check into my parole agent the very next day and did what I did, knowing what my consequences were and did it anyways. You know, and this just keeps going on, right? And so, like, I know I had to go check into my parole agent the next day, and I don't know if it was an act of God or whatever it may be, but normally I run, you know, and this time I just showed up to my parole agent's office, and he had that nice little drug test there waiting for me, and I looked at him, and I said, I'm not going to be able to pass that. And he goes, well, thank you for being honest. I said, I have a freaking problem, and I need freaking help, and if you know, I don't get help, I'm going to freaking die out here. And that was like the actual moment that for the first time in my life that I reached out and asked for somebody I didn't even know's help. He could have put me back in prison, and he didn't. He looked at me, and he gave me a list of treatment facilities. And he goes, you're not court mandated to go, but I suggest you find a facility on that list and get yourself help. And this is where my journey begins. You know what I mean? I look at this list, I call, they're full. I call, they're full. I call, they're full. You know what I mean? And I'm starting to give up, right? And I'm starting to, like, you know, like, screw it. Like, I'm going to go back out and just let them catch me, and I'll just go back to prison. Like, my life is unmanageable, and I do not know how to live on life's terms. Like, once things get hard for me, I don't know how to freaking live. You know, and thank God for this last facility, right? I called Gibson House for Women. And they told me to come in. And this is where my journey begins, you know what I mean? And I wish that I could tell you that I got it on the first time. I didn't. You know, like, I fully believe that what you get, what you put in is what you get anywhere in life. And I feel like that is the same for this program of Narcotics Anonymous. Like, if you only put a little in, that's all you're gonna get. Like, if you don't fully work this program to the fullest, like, Narcotics Anonymous gives you the freedom of active addiction. That shit blew my mind. I was introduced to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous due to a treatment facility. And when I first came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, like, for me, like, I was on a court card, right? And so I would put it down on the table and go outside because I was so uncomfortable. Like, I would hear you guys share, and I thought it was baloney. Like, there's no way that if you were like me and where I come from, there's no way that you got that. Like, are you sure you've been clean that long? Like, you know what I mean? And then you guys are like giving hugs and doing all this stuff, and it really made me really uncomfortable, you know? And like, thank God for the old timers, man. Thank you for staying. Thank you for showing us the way, you know what I mean? Because if it wasn't for you guys, this program wouldn't be here still. For keeping the doors open for an addict for me to walk in. Like, I can tell you that I didn't come here with the intentions to really freaking do this. Like, I was here on a court card. But the seed was planted. That gentle hug that you gave me, as uncomfortable as it may have been, made me feel at home. You know, like, just coming up and asking how I am, like, this is my experience, this is my strength, and this is my hope that I tell you, this is my truth. Like, I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, broken and beat down to beyond, like, anything. Like, I just had no more hope. And you guys, by simply showing up and sharing your message of recovery and just, you know, like, being decent human beings, kept making me want to come back. So I didn't get it on the first time, because on the first time I decided that, like, it was a smart idea to hang out with the other newcomers that I was in treatment with. The dumb leading the dumb. Because before you knew it, I was off and loaded with people I didn't even like. Getting loaded with them. And then I came back one more time. I called Gibson House. One more time. Please take me back. And they took me back. So I put a little bit more this time. Just a little bit. You know? And I was going to decide to be a manager at a sober living. You know, I was in a sober living through Gibson House as it was already, and I did not leave with integrity, because I did not want the counselor to tell me that this is probably a bad idea, you know. So I left like a thief in the night, and that was with my best friend Michael P. He had the bright idea to open up a sober living for girls. Yeah, Jay knows. And he wanted me as the house manager, and I only had 60 days clean. So here I am in this house thinking I'm running shit and doing something great and being housed with other women with just as less clean time as I did. And did not work out. I ended up loaded and high one more time with all the girls in the house while Michael P. was out working. Yeah. And so, like, for me, like, and I'm going to tell you this, I was out there one more time in a hotel room with a bunch of people. Like, I can find them. Immediately, all those people, and be in a hotel room with them and feel alone. And I remember, no matter how hard I tried, I was trying to get loaded in that bathroom and I couldn't. And I remember I got out of that bathroom and I kicked everybody out of the hotel room. And I'm gonna tell you this, like, I sat in that hotel room and mutilated myself. And I know there's children in here, so I'm not going to say how that was, but you probably already have an idea. I had abscess on my arms, on my hands, and this is within 2 weeks of leaving my sober living that I was running, right? I had people who freaking loved me, Narcotics Anonymous, that see me come in and out of these rooms, that had not given up on me, reaching out to me, telling me, just come back, Mel. just come back, like, we love you. And I swear to God, I'd be in the hotel room. I swear I used to think that Michael P. was following me. The people from the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous were going to come to the hotel and take me away. Like, I was, like, in that psychosis. Like, these people are crazy, you know? And but thank God for those people. Thank God for those people, because that is the reason why I came back. You know, and in that hotel room, like, I saw myself in that hotel mirror, and I saw what I was doing to myself. And you can think that I'm crazy, but I'm going to tell you this. I heard my God of my understanding talking to my ear, telling me, this is not what your life is supposed to be like. Go back to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, Mel. And I was on my hands and knees about to give up. And when he spoke those words to me so gently in my ear, I came back to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And I am forever, so forever grateful, because I said that I was going to do everything that I never did before. I'm going to do everything I never did before. And now, you know what that was? Is that I grabbed a hold of some the old-timer's pocket, man. And they took me everywhere with them. They took me to the meetings. They fellowshipped with me. They checked up on me. They helped me. They took me to help me try to get my kids back. Like, they did all these freaking amazing things, like that love, that unity. And I'm forever grateful for that. You know, because of the work that I have done in this program, I got a sponsor, I work steps, I go to meetings, I'm of service, I do everything that they tell me to do around here, right? And that's why I've been here for 13 years. The gift of this program and the beauty of this program has given me back my children that I thought I would never freaking have. It has given me the relationship back with my mother that I lost for so many years because she didn't put up with my baloney when I was out there. And I'm going to tell you what kind of mom I had. When I was in prison, I wrote her a letter and I told her, thank you for taking care of my kids, right? She wrote me back. She said, you know what? I didn't do it for you. It's not their fault that their mom is a junkie. And I never will forget those words. I needed to hear that, because if I had somebody coddling me and freaking enabling me, I would have never made it back to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I needed to be told what was real, what were facts, and how you do it, how you stay here. I needed to know these things. I needed a woman in Narcotics Anonymous to show me how to be a woman. I needed a woman to show me in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous how to be a mother. And that's because of this program that I'm able to be an amazing wife. I have a husband that I've been with him for 14 years, and he's never laid a hand on me. He opens up the door for me when I go into my car. He tells me he loves me every day. He wakes up every morning telling me how beautiful I am. He wakes up every morning and he brings me coffee. He supports me. He doesn't treat me like I let others treat me in the past. And that is all due to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because that man on 420 will have 16 years clean in this program as well. You know, I'm going to end. I don't know how much time I have. This is, like, I want to share this with you because this was a very big moment in my life. Like, I loved my mom more than anything in this world. And when I got clean, like, I regained that relationship back with her, and I was able to fly her out from Oklahoma and have her come over, and we spent that time together. She got to see me raise my sons. She was my biggest cheerleader in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. She would show up when I would take my clean time, and when I had 6 months clean, she found out she had idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, and they only gave her 10 years, and I only had 6 months at that time. So I knew that her time was short, right? And so that's why I like try to make as many memories as I could with this woman. But for some reason, she kept getting pneumonia, and it kept progressing her disease even worse. And at that time, my mom was only 55 years old, the most beautiful woman you have ever seen. And she's been sick several times before, right? And I would show up like, you get to do these things in Narcotics Anonymous, like be there for people, right? Because so many times everybody else had to be there for me all the time, right? So when I got into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I was able to be there for her for once. And I would show up and I would be on the side of the bed with her and let her know that it was gonna be okay, right? And my mom was such a strong woman that she would pull through every freaking time, right? Because that's just the woman she was, like strong and beautiful, right? Until she couldn't fight anymore. And I remember I had 5 years clean, right? And they told me that, like, you need to get out here in Oklahoma, like, now because we do not know how long she's gonna live. Like, everything is shutting down. Her organs are shutting down. And I remember I could not even see straight. Like, I couldn't even book my flight. Like, my hands were trembling. Like, this, I was so afraid that I was gonna not be able to say goodbye to her. And my husband did all that for me. The people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because I couldn't financially afford to do it, fucking showed up and made sure that I got out there with my mom. And I was able to be there for her, you know? And she was in a coma for 2 weeks. And I stood by her side and I would play Led Zeppelin for her because she loved Led Zeppelin. And I would freaking, you know, talk to her like she was there. And I would tell my mom everything, like, thank you for always forgiving me. Thank you for being there for me. Thank you for taking care of my children when I couldn't, right? And I knew in my heart that she heard every word that I told her, right? And then miraculously, my mom wakes up from this coma. She wakes up from this coma, right? But then she's stuck in her body. She can't move her arms. She can't move her legs. But her personality was bigger than this world. Like, my mom had a joke for everything. She wanted a bubble bath from the nurses. Like, she was just on and cracking. Like, I thought I got my mom back, right? Like, oh my gosh, she's gonna make it through this. Like, it was a roller coaster, and I'm out there, and the people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous are supporting me, calling me, checking on me. I'm going to meetings in Oklahoma through this whole thing, and they're there, they're supporting me, you know. And then I go into the room, right, and my mom's in there, and it's just me and her. And the doctor comes in, and he tells her, like, I have two different scenarios. And my mom's listening, and he tells her, like, Debbie, you're going to be bedridden for the rest of your life. And, like, in my mind, I'm thinking, like, I'm moving to Oklahoma. Like, I'm going to take care of my mom. Like, I'm going to do all this, right? And I'm looking at my mom, and my mom's shaking her head like this. And he goes, or we will put you in hospice so that you can pass. And I'm looking in the eyes of my mother. And she looked at me and she told me, thank you, honey, for giving me the best years you could have ever given me. All I ever wanted was to see you clean. And she said, and you gave me that. She goes, I'm done. She goes, you cannot expect me to live like this anymore. She goes, I'm tired of the pain. I just want to go. And she goes, and you know why I'm okay to go? And I said, no, Mom, I don't know why. Because she said, I know you're going to be okay.
I could not have experienced this if it wasn't for the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Like, if I was still lost out there, I would have never had this experience with my mom. And so how I celebrate her life is that I continue to stay clean. I continue to be of service, no matter how hard it gets, because even having 13 years, I can still feel like a newcomer. You know, and I gotta remember, like, isolation and all that stuff, like, it's shown over and over through time that if you do not come to these meetings, if you're not of service, if you do not get a sponsor, if you do not work these steps, and if you don't do what your predecessors have done before you, well, guess what happens? You get lost. And I've seen it so many times. Like, check on our old timers. Check on the ones that are you think that are the strongest. Newcomers are the most important person in this meeting. We all are the most important person in this meeting because we are the bloodline of Narcotics Anonymous. So check on each other. Love on each other. Like, I don't want to freaking die. I don't want to be out there. Like, you guys are my family. When I'm here, I am home. I am home. Thank you. My name is Melissa, and I'm an addict.